In 2006, the Irish Loreto nuns arrived to Rumbek in South Sudan, and what they met there were sparse fields, a community struggling for food and water, and a societal landscape that saw young girls married, uneducated and undervalued. Much has changed in the 18 years since, and what started as a Loreto boarding school has developed, with the area now offering primary education, graduate options and a community of educated and independent women. My next guests here in studio have come from Rumbek, originally from Bray. Orla Tracy has been with the Loreto Nuns Mission since it began. And Elizabeth Adak is with us, born and bred in South Sudan. Adak, let me begin with you. Your first interaction with the Loreto Nuns and the project was what?
It was about the education of child in South Sudan. And many girls in South Sudan do not go to school. And for me, for my family, I was the first girl to go to school. And I had to wake up every day to walk 2 hours to go to school. And I had to have the confidence as well to ask even to go to school, because many of us are not allowed to go to school. And by the time I completed my primary school, many girls were married or were forced to marry, actually. And my first interaction with the Loreto school was to join Loreto Secondary School. And that's where I started my secondary education, and I completed my secondary school from there through Loreto Sisters.
And did you go on to third level thereafter?
Yes, they continue to support me in my university level, and I am back now in the country working as a barrister. And currently I'm working as a legal advisor in the government.
How many, what sort of percentage of women would get third level educations in South Sudan? I assume it's a very small percent.
It's a small percent, but since the Loreto Sisters came in, the percentage increased, and we are now 500 graduates from university.
What's, in terms of the culture, is it seen as culturally acceptable for a young girl to go to primary or a young girl to go to secondary, or did you have to fight against the sort of society norms?
I do have to fight against such norms, and actually through the help of Loreto Sisters, I was able to overcome all those challenges like forced marriages and early marriage as well. That is, those are the things that do not allow us to be in school, and luckily I was with Loreto Sisters and I managed to get my education.
Forced marriage, early marriage, what sort of age for early marriages?
Early marriage is 14 years and 15 years. And forced marriage is even when you're above 18, you can be forced to marry. And they do that because of cows. You are married for cows. And as a girl, as you're growing up, by the age of 14, you can be married off early. Yes, and the culture is that, for us, marriage is a collective responsibility of all the family members. And when your mother is being married to your father, for example, his brothers and all the other relatives have to contribute to the marriage. And now, when you have the first daughter in the family, that is like it's a compensation. The first daughter has to be married off, and as a parent, you don't have a say because these people helped you to marry your wife before, yeah. And so for us, it's like we compensate for what our mothers were married for. Yes,
so presumably then there's a huge economic disincentive when it comes to school. If you're going to second level school, if you're going to university, there is a sense among the family that this costs them huge amounts of wealth.
They don't look at the cost of the school, but they look at the cost, what it would can cost them culturally, because they want the cows. And for us, what they do is when you accept to take your sons to go to school, you sell cows so that you can support them. But for girls, they don't do that. They have to marry them off so that they get the cows for the boys.
Orla, explain then the link with the Loreto Nuns. Back in 2006 is when you first got involved. Why? What drew you to South Sudan?
Yeah, the Loreto Sisters around the world had this campaign to rediscover our missionary spirit. And our leadership team in Rome invited all of the Loreto Sisters around the world to rediscover, to refound a new mission. And the movement was called the Courage to Move. The Irish Loreto Sisters received an invitation to go to then southern Sudan. It was still part of Sudan, and to begin a girls' boarding secondary school. So we went in 2006. It actually took us 2 years to get started. And a little bit of what Adak is saying, girls are not valued. Their education is not valued. So when we went, we couldn't even get girls to go to secondary school. Because the reality was girls weren't even going to primary school. So we had to work very hard with the community to try and build up the trust, build up the relationship and slowly bring the girls in. But again, we don't have quality education. So you're bringing girls into secondary school who would really be the standard of second class in Ireland. So it took us a long time. We now have a preparatory class. And thankfully, we now have 385 girls coming to us. But it's like, we call it a boarding school. It's really a women's refuge because we'd regularly get parents coming or extended family members. As ADAC says, families don't value the girls to be educated. They just want their cows. So you'll regularly get families coming looking for their daughters and saying, look, she's due to get married. We want her or whatever. So you're constantly...
As in arriving at the door of the school saying, give me my child.
Arriving at the door of the school, give me back my daughter. And sometimes it's not even the father. We've learnt. We've had to build relationships with the government. We now have a very good relationship with the governor, the government and the local tribal leaders. We now have a contract. So when a girl comes to secondary school to us, she's usually at the age of about 16. We insist that the family members sign a contract that they will not take the girl out of school. But as ADAC has said, it's a collectivist community. So the uncles mightn't agree to that. So you might have the father on side, you might have the brothers on side, but the uncles may not agree to that. And the next thing you know, the uncles are coming to the gate saying, I want my daughter. And you're saying to the uncles, listen, this is the contract. It's been signed by the family. You need to go and sort it out at home. But, you know, it's very hard if you're looking for your cows, and it's very hard when some foreigner is telling you you're not getting
it. Well, on that note, how did you manage to get the acceptance that you have got? Because I would have thought arriving in as a foreigner, arriving in to challenge what is a deeply ingrained, traditional, established way of life and getting people to act in a way that is inimical to their economic interests, all of that I would have thought is an extremely significant challenge.
Incredible. It was a cultural change. And I mean, the only thing you can do in a context like that is to build relationships. The girls themselves became the ambassadors of change. I mean, you imagine ADAC is here with me now, and 18 years after we went, she's now a qualified barrister working in the government. They're the ones leading the change now. And that's what's been happening to us. I remember the first time I was really challenged by the students. They were in what we would call leaving cert class. And one of them, she was being forced to marry by her family. And she had gone home naively believing she was just being asked to choose a husband and that she'd be back in school the next week. She never came back to school. And I remember going into her class in the early years and saying to them, listen, it's really sad. Mary, whatever her name is, won't be back. You know, I heard she's getting married. Wow, they really lit on me. And they said, you know, sister, if you don't act, you might as well pack your bags and go back to Ireland. Because if you lose her, you will lose all of us because our parents will feel it is acceptable. And they were right. I mean, they keep pushing us to change. They keep pushing that agenda.
So what did you do?
So we got into the car. We drove down to the village about 3 hours away. It was a very hostile environment. Unfortunately, she had already been given to the man that the night before. But we went into the hut. She was there under armed guard, screaming, crying, under supervision and saying, you know, sister, I'm going to kill myself or whatever. And I said, this is shocking. Absolutely shocking. She was devastated. And we were devastated as well. So all we could do was to sit down with the extended family and say, listen, guys, we understand this is your cultural practice. We are not here to undermine it, but she is so near to finish. Can you allow her at least to finish? It was only 3 months to finish. Can you allow her to finish? And they said, yeah, we'll have a talk about it with the family and we'll bring her back to school. Unfortunately, she never came back. Now, she was able in the sense that the marriage was finally dissolved a month later because she ran away, she was arrested and she sought a divorce. But she was traumatized by the experience and she came back to school and she said, sister, I would love to come back. But she said, I'm just not able to come back at the moment. She did marry a guy that she loved 2 years later and she did finish secondary school in another school.
ADAC, in marriages in that kind of situation, does the girl have an established relationship with the boy in question or the woman or man, depending on the age that they're at? Or is it that you are simply told that is who you're marrying?
Mostly they just arrange for you when you just come, you just call for the wedding because the cows are already given and everything is already settled. You don't even have a say. You don't even have to be asked for an opinion. And that's why we say, when we say forced, is that you don't have a choice. Sometimes you don't even have you don't even know the husband. You don't even know the names of the husband. But the family are the one that established the relationship for you.
Do you now try to convince young women, convince girls to attend school to follow your path?
I do. And the positive part of the education we are receiving from Loreto is that the cultural perspective is changing for women, and this is helping us. For example, in my family, my younger siblings now are going to school, and the other people are also going to school. And the challenge now is the quality education. Parents are now willing to take their daughters to school, but getting the good education that we need right from the primary level to secondary level is what we have as a challenge right now. And we are happy we have Loreto.
Can we talk a little bit about personal risk in this? Because we were talking sort of humorously during the break, and I don't know how we got to it, but I asked you semi-facetiously, had you been arrested, Orla, to which the answer was, I think, repeatedly. The risk that you have genuinely been arrested in South Sudan on a number of occasions.
Right. It's unfortunate. I mean, I'm not trying to be funny about this. Maybe our arrest is a little bit different, but I would often get a summons by the police to go to court. I suppose as a missionary, this is who we are. We are embedded with the community. We live and work with the community, and we suffer with the community. That's part of the reality. But I've learned to draw on the resources around us. We have a lot of graduates working with us. We have a very good relationship with the local chiefs. We have a very good relationship with the governor. And very often when they do come to arrest me, I will call the chief and I'll say, listen, I'm in trouble again.
It's in trouble for what? What do they arrest you for?
It's usually around the issue of marriage. A family has paid cows, and this particularly was in the earlier years as well. A family has paid 150, or let's say a man has paid 150 cows to marry a girl who is a student in our school. She is a boarder in our school, and the family of the man are coming to the school to get her out. And I am saying no. And that caused a lot of problems.
Do they arrive armed?
They can arrive armed. In the early years, we used to just have a fence, and we had a problem where we had guns and a lot of sticks and machetes and these things. We actually had to build a wall in the end to protect the girls, because it wasn't just the arms, it was the intimidation and the abuse, the verbal abuse at the gate and around the fence for the girls. So, you know, you live in that reality. But to be honest with you, what we experience is only a fraction of what each of the girls experience. I mean, Adak is a legal advisor in the government today, but she's considered a child still because she's not married. And I think within the culture, you are an educated woman to a point. You're a leader in your community to a point, but you still have to bring cows and you still have to show that tradition in your family.
Can you explain that, Adak? What does that mean in how you, in your personal experience? You are working for the government, qualified barrister. How are you still treated as a child?
Because I'm not married, in our culture, they believe that to be a leader, for example, you must have children and you must have a husband. And since I have not achieved that yet, I'm still like a child to them. And no matter what I do, I cannot get a promotion. For example, now I am aspiring to be a judge, but I cannot be a judge if I'm not married and if I don't have children. But I would love to marry. I would love to have children. But the difficult part of it now is finding a man that will support my career. And that is the difficult part of it.
Because presumably there is a significant cultural challenge in that,
yes,
as well as finding the right man.
Because the men don't want us to work, even if you have education.
Can I ask then finally, Orla, the prospect of change, I assume this is the sort of Sisyphean thing of pushing a boulder up a hill. Does there come a point where you think that this is a pointless struggle, it is too difficult a task?
Anton, we're going around to Ireland over the last week or two, and it's just incredible to hear the, you know, a DAC story. Mary's with us as well. It's incredible to hear their story and for them to talk in front of students in Ireland and talk about the battle for education and what that means. We're here in Ireland at the moment because of the young women in South Sudan. We have five married graduates who are living in the town of Awil, which is near the border with Sudan. They have been educated with us. They're all now married and working, thankfully. Their husbands have agreed for them to work. And they're now looking at the next generation. They're saying, you know what? What you have in Rumbek with quality education for young women, we would like to offer to the young women in our area. Would Loreto come and would Loreto do it again? And we're looking at them. We're saying, well, we have an issue with finances. But yes, absolutely, the more we can do to help these young women in the country. But the beautiful thing about it, 18 years later, it was the bishop who invited us the last time. It's the young women of South Sudan who are inviting us this time. And it's a beautiful story. I was talking to Paul earlier and I was wondering if he could help us with the personal finance so we could build some sort of a credible investment fund to help. But maybe your listeners are out there this morning, Anton, and maybe they're feeling like they want to be part of this journey with us.
You talked about the bishop having invited you first, the women of South Sudan inviting you for the expansion of it. What's the view of government? Is there a driving overarching desire to bring about cultural change, or are you an accepted annoyance?
No, I think it's both. I think that there are members of our community, and ADAC talks about that, there are members of our community that are holding on to the culture. But I think the government is realising quality education is the way forward. We got independence in 2011. We didn't, I mean, where Ireland got independence, we were educated. South Sudan got educated. We got independence, but we were not educated. So I think the government realises, we all realise, if we want a better South Sudan today, we need quality education and we need to help the young people in the country.
When do you both head back to South Sudan?
We are going back on Sunday. And I would like to say thank you for the Irish people for the work they have been doing. And actually, I'm happy to be here to let them know that we are now 500 graduates who have successfully completed the third level of university. And also to invite them for the new journey that we are about to start in South Sudan to educate more young people in South Sudan. Thank you.
Elizabeth Adak, thank you very much. And likewise, Sister Orla Tracy, thank you.